the top of Ayin Bet Amud Aleph, three lines down. Tanu Rabbanan, Israel shalava ma'ot min anachribi ribit. So here's a Jew that borrowed money from an achri with ribit on it, which is permitted. V'zakfan alav b'milveh. Right, then he takes all the accrued interest that he hasn't paid until that point in time, and then they recreate it into a full keren. I mean, they make it all come due. And when it's due, then he says to him, listen, now it's a full loan, which includes the keren and all the accrued interest. That's now the loan amount.
He didn't pay the keren
either. Not yet, nothing. Gayer. Then the goyer is migayer. If before he converted, right, then he made it into a full loan, then go get the keren, but go get the ribit. Then it's not a problem because he's now made the what was the keren and the accrued interest into keren now, so that's fine because now as a Jew he's only collecting keren. On the other hand, if he only did this after he converted, he converted the loan into from the accrued interest and keren into a keren, then it doesn't work. Right, go back to Karen, but he didn't go back to repeat. At that point, he can take the Karen and not the repeat because he's doing this while he's a Jew already. So he's trying to now convert the accrued interest into Karen once he's a Jew.
I could just say the Gare in front of the best and interrupt before you rush. Just doing it all right back. There's one thing I have to take care
of. Chayn, Nachri, Shalavama, Ot, Yisrael. What about the other way around? If the Nachri was the borrower from Yisrael. Again, if he converted the whole loan plus the accrued interest into a loan now, if the Jew converted the loan before, prior to the conversion of the debtor, the goy, then goveta keren vegoveta ribit. It's fine. Again, if he did it after the conversion, goveta keren venu goveta ribit. He can collect the keren, he can't collect the ribit now because he's a Jew, and then he can't collect ribit from a Jew. Rabbi Yossi Omer qualifies, he argues on the Seifa here and says, Nachri shalava ma'ot miyisrael b'ribit, ben kach u'ben kach guvet ha'keren v'guvet ha'ribit. Irrespective of when he was zokfen alav b'milveh, he can collect both the keren and the ribit. He can collect both of them. So now, why is that? Why should it be now? He's a Jew, he's a full-fledged Jew. Why should he be able to collect the ribit now? So Amar Rava, Amar Rav Chista, Amar Rav Huna, lochach Rabbi Yossi. Lochach like Rabbi Yossi. And Amar Rava, my time with Rabbi Yossi. What is the reasoning of Rabbi Yossi? Kedei shelo yomru b'shvil ma'utav nitgayer zeh. That the whole reason he's converting is that he had this loan outstanding that had accrued interest on it. So now he thinks, you know what? It's actually profitable to convert at this point in time. If he converts, he'll only own the keren. As there is, if he doesn't convert, he's going to own the keren and the interest and the ribit. So it's kedai for him to convert. So in order to make it both from a perspective of his own perspective, that's not an incentive for him to convert. And number two is that people don't view it, right? Outsiders don't look at it as if the conversion's been compelled by monetary matters, which is that he now saves money by converting, right? Then we keep in place the keren and the ribit, and say pay the whole thing so that there's no suspicion in this instance. So now, this is a very interesting Gemara, Tanu Rabbanan, Shtar Shekatuv Bo Ribit. You have a shtar that has interest written into the ribit. Konsinoto, there's a loan document. The loan document has in it both the principal and the interest written in. The loan with a interest. With everything on it, right? So now, konsinoto, ve'enu guve, lo te keren ve'lo te ribit, divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir makes the document invalid. As if the document is completely invalid, he cannot collect, neither can he collect the keren, nor can he collect the interest at this point in time. He loses out on both. Chamimomim guveta keren veino guveta ribit. I'm going to say no. The penalty refers to the interest. What he was illegal or was improper was the interest that he may not collect. On the other hand, he could be called the keren. He can collect the principal. Well, my kamiflegay. What's their argument about? Rav Meir sevar katzina neteru mishum misuro. Rav Meir holds right that we're kones the keren, which is had their gamur because of the isur. I mean that we have to give him a disincentive. What's his downside? Again, if he writes a shtar with keren and ribit in it, what's his downside? He loses the ribit? That's not a disincentive for him to lend with ribit. He'll lend with ribit, and the worst comes to worst, he won't get the ribit. But here, if you're konis him to lose also the keren, then he has a reason not to lend up front with ribit, because he could lose the whole loan. It's not kedai for him. We're not konis, right? It's an isur d'oraisa, we don't have to be konis. It just take away the interest.
Logically, if the isur of ribit were only on the lender, I could see that they were was saying differently, right? Saying that you're yours. But because they both have a disincentive, they're both over in Israel over here. So if you eliminate everything, so the borrower is
it's also a better thing. That's a very nice. That's a good thought. Very nice. Yeah, it's good thought. Good thought. All right. Tanan Hatam. So we have a Mishnah, right? And we've seen this in other places, by in Ketubot and other places. Shtarei Chov Mukdamim, right? A Shtar Chov that is Mukdam, it's predated Shtar. Psulim, that's Pasul. Why? Because now you're allowing to take from Mishubadim prior to his time, and he now gets precedence over other properties that were encumbered after the time that's written in the document before his loan. But if it's a post-dated shtar, then there's nothing to lose here because he's actually losing himself. Meaning that he actually is to his deficit. So that would be fine. Now, umukdamim amay psulim. Why should a mukdam be pasul? Nehitilo gabu mizman arishon. Find that the first date or the predated right shtar should be invalid. But nignu mizman asheni. But you should be able to use this document to be kovet from the time that the real loan happened. I mean, it finds that the dating and the predating of the shtar makes it so that the shtar is invalid for the earlier date. Why can't it be valid for the date that the loan actually took place on?
We don't know when it took place.
So I'm assuming that we can find out when the actual loan took place. So I'm Rabbi Shimon Galakish, the Machlokish Nuya. This happens to be a Machlokis. Rabbi Meir here. And this is the shita of Rabbi Meir. The shita of Rabbi Meir would be here. The shtar yamukdamim, like the shtar repeat. When you have something wrong with the shtar becomes entirely invalid. It's not like a piece of the shtar stays and a piece of the shtar goes. It'll be entirely invalid. So that's what it says. This statement, this Mishnah, is also from Meir Shita, the Shita Toh, that everything is pasul. Whereas the Chachamim would believe.
But as we said,
the other case was a knas.
What?
The other case was a knas. You're talking about like the previous.
Yeah, by repeat.
That was a knas.
So same thing here. The knas would be that because you predated the shtar, it makes the shtar entirely invalid. It won't even be valid for the proper date on the shtar. Rabbi Yishai Lakish's opinion is that statement of Ashtar Mukdamim is unique to Rabbi Meir, that Rabbanan would disagree, and Rabbanan would believe Ashtar Mukdamim, true, it's not kasher from the Zman of Mukdam, but it would be kasher from the Zman that he really did loan, and there he could take encumbered property from that time forward. Yochanan Amar, Afilu Teimer Rabbanan, now even Rabbanan in this case might agree. Why? Because Zeir Hashem Yigbeh Zman HaRishon. This is the problem with David, a little bit what you mentioned, is that not everybody is a baki about when the loan really happened. Not everybody knows that the date is mismarked in the shtar. So if we let the shtar stand and still say that he can only collect from the later date, are we afraid that he'll take the shtar out on someone who doesn't know about the dating? With Rebit, it's always obvious that something's wrong in the shtar. Because Rebit and the Karen are separate in the shtar. And since they're separate and it's known that Rebit's an Isur, the person always knows that the Rebit is outside the picture and the Karen's inside the picture. That's not true when you have a misdating in the shtar. A misdating of the shtar, you can't always clarify that the date, not everybody should be aware that there's a problem with the shtar.
Especially if we say that the shtar is like
Mikuyam. Right, so we're going to see that in a minute in the Gemara about Mikuyam. Right, so now, the Rashi says, and this is where the Machlokes comes, Rashi says here in all these cases, Psulim. When we say Pasul and Psulim, Pasul Psulim, Rashi keeps saying, the Eino Toreif min HaMeshubadim. The Rashi keeps saying that the shtar is invalid in the sense that you're not allowed to make cake from mishubad, property that's encumbered. But that means that the shtar stays in place, that you have then still a milveh b'shtar, but it doesn't allow you to collect from mishubadim, which basically converts it into a milveh al peh. Right? So that's what Rashi says about Rabbi Meir. When he says psulim, it means psulim, means milveh al peh.
Tosfos,
the milveh still exists, and the chov is still in existence. That's why Rashi is. So Tosfos, of course, quotes Rashi. If you just look at the top Tosfos, Pesh Ribam, they don't go veh mirshabde, abo b'mnei charei gabe, al pi oto shtar. So that's what we Rashi's opinion, right? The edim enam psulim. So first of all, the edim are psulim, but why not? Right, Shaul, you were asking about that. Here, edim signed on the shtar rebit, and the edim are in violation, right? He says the enam edei chamas. They're not considered edei chamas. The ein marvichim kum b'davar. So even though the edim are in violation of isur, the only time that we classify edim as being psulim is where the benefit of the edim, right, is to their own pocket. That there's something that they're going to be marviach, and therefore we say that they're edei chamas, and then they can't qualify. Fikashu says, I don't understand this, but Tosefta says the Mechilton, Hamotzi star sheyesh bo ribit yikareno. Says someone who finds the shtar with ribit in it should rip it up right away. Now, why should the Tosefta allow someone who finds the shtar ribit to rip it up? Why? Because it's still valuable to the malveh. So even though it can't be goveh the ribit, and it can't be goveh right, from the Mishubadim, he still has a shtar that keeps the chov alive. If you rip up the shtar, then he loses that evidence of being loaned. So why should we let anybody who finds the shtar rip it up? Doesn't make so much sense. So you see, Nehi writes, four lines down from the Mir, the Rebbeir Kanis Gamre, that the Knas of Rebbe Meir is the Gamre. He wipes out the loan entirely. Velo Gavi Beklau. This shtar is completely invalid, and you can't use the shtar as evidence of the loan. Kemosh Shtari Chova Mugdamim. It says, just like the shtar Chova Mugdamim, the Ruminim is Samoch Rebbe Meir, Va'af Agav Shigam Sham Perish Bekuntris. Even though over there, Rashi also explains, Dein Pesulim Elo Gavot Mim Shabdei. Rashi says the same, it's consistent throughout, right, the Shita Toh, that you can't take from encumbered property. Ein Nira. The Psulim Mashma Delo Gavi Beklav. Thus it says that when it says Psulim, it says you can't use the shtar at all. It becomes an invalid document. So it's a big, problem. Now, Tosfos goes one step further, which is unbelievable. So if you think now, Rashi says, okay, the shtar is still evidence of the loan. You just can't use it to take it from encumbered property, from Meshubadim. Great, Tosfos says the loan's invalid, meaning that this is not evidence of the chov. But what that indicate? That would indicate if you were able to bring evidence of the chov from somewhere else, you should be able to collect it. So Tosfos takes another step forward. Later on the Tosfos, it's down where the Gemara becomes narrow and then widens out. The second to last little narrow line in the Gemara. If you go across, it says, V'od Nira. Dafilu yesh edim acherim. O shechayav modeh. Afilu hochi konish rabbi meir. That even if you have evidence of the loan from somewhere else, the knas is in place. The hachi mashmo. That's what his statement means. The enko ve'keren dumya de rebit. He can't collect the keren, just like he can't collect the rebit. When he can't collect the rebit, means period. So same thing with the keren. He can't collect the keren, period. The loan is gone. The whole chov has been forgiven here. Right? With Tosefta, now he mashmo. Dafilu mevel pekonis. That even the Tosefta quotes here, it sounds like that even in a oral din, that it doesn't apply over here. So it's amazing, right, that Tosfos over here says that polar opposite of Rashi. Right, Rashi says that there's chol is still in place. The shtar is evidence of that chol. You just can't collect from Meshubadim with this shtar, but it still allows you to collect the chol as long as he has money. Tosfos says not only is the shtar invalid, so that you can't even use the shtar as evidence of the loan, but the loan is totally forgiven. That even if you can bring a raya to this loan from somewhere else, without the shtar, you will not be able to collect the loan. It's forgiven and gone. It's wiped out entirely, according to Rabbi Meir. That's the knas. The knas is that the loan, it's an ice loan, right? There is no loan anymore. Because of the one other issue is that, okay, we said before, he justified the position of the edim by the shtar revit, right? That's in there. But then he says, aval kasha, hi ayi shtar yechov ha-mukdomim, heif ayitim kshirin. By the shtar chov mukdomim that they sign on, how are the edim kshirin? They predated the shtar. They're signing on a shtar that's clearly false. So over here, like with rebit, you can argue. And Tosfos does over here argue with their reasons too. Right, but they're not in violation of Yisur. We said over there when they're in violation of Yisur, it has to be Ede Chamas, that they have to have some benefit from it. When they tell Sheker, you don't need any Chamas. If they're going to lie, we're not going to accept. We don't want anything like that around. If they're going to lie, so here they sign on something that's clearly a false document. So that's Vishalmar. So Tosfos set up crazy. It's unbelievable. They were compelled to sign it because they were under duress. That's one. Oh, to go and show me ta'inu b'shnat ha-melech. We made a mistake. We got the wrong date, or that they got the Ibru, you know, Ibura Chodesh. So those guys come up with all sorts of excuses over here. Why they're not necessarily psulim. Otherwise, how could you have a deem that are signing on a valid document and then have the document be valid to use? Now, first of all, according to Rabbi Meir, according to Shita Toh, it's not a problem. But the Chamin, who think the shtar is a valid shtar, and you can collect, right, the Karen from it, how could it be that these Eidim are becoming the shtar valid? Because they are actually Eidei Sheker. So that's he has come up with all these ways to get out of the problem of the Eidim being Eidei Sheker.
I don't think it's so far-fetched to say that Eidim can make a mistake about the date.
Right, it's not so far-fetched, but it's not.
It's a
right, that's the whole case here. It also says that in general we hold the lachas like Rebbe Meir b'zero taf. That's a general principle in the Gemara. But that is because b'zero taf alo kansu taf. So despite the fact that it's b'zero taf, over here it's classified as a knas. And since it's a knas, the lacha will not be like Rebbe Meir here, despite the fact that the lacha to Rebbe Meir be b'zero taf. Right. So gavra demashkin le pardesi lechavrei. Here, an individual made it as a mashkon, his pardes. You know, we would say an orchard. Rashi calls it a kerem, so that he was mashkin this kerem to his friend. Afkot lachshane. So he ate it for 3 years. The creditor, right, the malveh, ate it for 3 years. So then Amalei, so he comes back to the debtor, he's smart, he says, mutav. He says, either you sell me the property now, vilo, if you don't sell me the property, kavishna la shtar mashkanta. I'll basically rip up the shtar that it's a mashkon with me. And then I'll go to Beis and make a claim that I bought it. And I will have what? I don't have to have a shtar anymore. I don't have to have a shtar anymore because it's 3 years. So I ate it for you. I ate it shnat chazakah. So if I ate it shnat chazakah and there's no shtar mashkon, then you're out of luck. And I would have bought it against your will anyway. So Azel comes. So the debtor was in a bad position. He really had to sell it to him. So what does he do? Azel comes. Makne l'vno akatan. He gave it to his. He was makne the property to his child, his young child. Then Hadar Zabna Hile. And then afterwards he agreed and signed a Shtar Mecher with the creditor. Right? So in exchange, it sounds like here, for exchange for the loan, he would forgive the loan and that would be the right to the Kuchahu. So then, Zvine Vade Lohavi. So it's clear that the transaction itself is not a transaction because he gave it to his son beforehand and that predated the sale. So the document's clearly invalid. That's not a question over here whether the Shtar, in a sense of the Shtar Mechira, is invalid. But the question is, right, Zuze, right, so, Vizvini, Vadilah, Vizvini. Zuze, Kimilva, Bishtar, Damu, Bagob, Nechasim, Shubadim, or Dilma, Kimilva, Damu, Beno, Gobem, Nechasim, Shubadim. Right, the question is the monies, because what happens now? The person who sold him the loans, basically what it says is, I paid you money, you got the field. And the money that he paid him was technically, would be, say, call it the forgiveness of the loan, or whatever he did to do that. Now, the sale became invalid. Why did the sale become invalid? Because he gave the property to his son prior to this point in time. But, on the other hand, what he wrote in the Shtar was that if they come and come and come and tarif it from you, then I have to replace it. There's a, right there, he's on the hook for the Shtar, right? He has achrayut on the Shtar. And since he has achrayut in the Shtar, he now has to pay back the money to the person who bought it from him. So now, once he's paying back this money, what type of claim does the individual who's coming to get his money back, what type of claim does he have? Does he have a claim because it's written in a shtar? Since it's written in a shtar, he has a claim on Mishubadim, because he can be torek Mishubad out of the shtar. Or do we say no? That he only has a claim, an oral claim, he can't collect from Mishubadim. Why? Because since the shtar is invalid for the mecher, it also invalidates the achayut from Mishubadim. That the invalidation of the shtar takes away the shtar's power entirely. And when it takes away its power entirely, that's what also entitles him, when he has achrayut, to collect from Mishubadim, is the shtar. The shtar is totally invalid. So that's a question now. The invalidation of the shtar, is it simply for the mechira? Or does the invalidation of the shtar affect also the achrayut here of the shtar? So Amar Rabbi, the like I knew the Ravasi, is this not the case of Ravasi? Now the way you can read the Gemara, there's a continuation of the question. Tosu says that the Gemara now is not even asking the question. The question now is about Ravasi's case, which is the case where the Lova is Modeh. Okay, where he is Modeh at the Shtar, he wrote the Shtar. Alright, so that's the case here. Dam Ravasi, Modeh Bishtar Shekotvo, if he admits that he wrote the Shtar, Enu Tzarech L'Kaimo. Then you don't have to validate the Shtar based in, but Govim Nechasim Mishubadim. So over here, the person who sold the shtar agrees that he wrote the shtar. Right? He's not denying that he wrote the shtar mechira, but he also is admitting or he's saying that he gave it to his son first. But he doesn't disagree. So now the fact that he does not disagree or does not undermine the shtar, because he's agreeing to it, it makes it into a shtar mekuyam. So if it's a shtar mekuyam, that should be valid enough for the malveh, the original malveh, creditor to come and take his money from him, even from Mishubadim. Because his validation of the shtar, even though it's enough, not enough to validate it in terms of the mechira, because the katan can show up with his shtar and say, listen, it's mine, but it's enough to validate it so that it has achrayut, that there's achrayut in the shtar. The achrayut in the shtar means that he can come back and claim. So what you have now is that this guy was smart, so his son will keep the property, it'll go back to him, and the loan will still be intact. Right? The loan will actually still be intact. Not only will it be intact, but the original lender or creditor will have a claim against him from Mishubadim. It'll only be from the date of the new shtar. It won't be from the original loan shtar, because he can't take that shtar out now, because it's clear that he forced him into a sale, and he can't take it out as a mashkon. But he has now, from this moment, he'll have a shtar with achrayut, according to what Abai is suggesting. Samarlei Rova. Rova says, how can you compare the cases? Midomi. Right? How can you compare these two cases? Hotam nitan lehikatev. Hochalo nitan lehikatev. Has to do with, over here, the shtar should never have been written. The shtar is invalid mikara. It's an invalid shtar to start with. So how can you make a claim if he admits that he wrote the shtar, that it's a good shtar, it's mekuyam? doesn't make any sense, right? You mean mekayim b'shtar that's invalid? That doesn't make sense. Now, when you can say, when the lobe shows up, and he's modi b'shtar, and then you say that he's validating a shtar that should have been written, right? So, fine. But in a case where the shtar was never should have been written, how can the admission of the lovet change the status of an invalid shtar and make it valid? That doesn't make sense. So, yotid mir imar, v'kamer l'hashmaito. So, Mamira sat down and said over this, amalei rabina l'mimimar. So, Rabina says to Mamira, el ha'dama Rabbi Yochanan. So wait a minute, if Rav is correct over here, then what about Rabbi Yochanan? What about Zera Shemi Yigbe Mizman HaRishon? Rabbi Yochanan claimed the reason that the Chachamim say, or could admit, by a shtar mukdal, that they would say the shtar is invalid, is because why? Maybe he'll be goveh from the original date. Why don't we just say, Neymar Adoloni Tenlehi Katev? Just say that the shtar, if you think this concept of a shtar being invalid is because it should never have been written, then why don't we just say that the Chachamim agree by shtar mukdal, because the star should never have been written. If the star should have never been written, then it should be invalid star. Nothing to do with we're afraid that it'll be Kobe Mishman Rishon. It should just be invalid because it's an invalid star. It should never have been written on that date. How could you compare these two cases? Right? I think that's what you probably you're going to ask, Shaul, which is right. This the shtar mukdam is not totally invalid. It's invalid for the date that's marked in it, but it's not invalid because it's evidence to a transaction that really took place. It's just evidence on the wrong date. Whereas over here, here the transaction is invalid entirely. It should never have been done because the transaction couldn't have happened because it was already given to his son. If it's given to his son, how can you write a shtar that should never have been written? Ella. How the Tanya? This is the question. The Sheva Karkaot, right? When it comes to Sheva Karkaot, remember we had this Mishnah earlier on that there are certain items, right, that the Chachamim were gozer or the Metakem Kishon Tikkun Olam. That's when a person who was stolen from or was taken invalidly from that they can't come and take these items because in the Davar Sof there's no way that the Kuchot buyers can take into consideration. We talked about this. Items that can be quantified, losses that can be quantified, buyers can deal with, and then they can purchase and leave over money or they know their risk. When it's an unquantifiable amount, which we say by Sheva Karkot, which the problem is if someone invests in a property, you have no idea how much they're going to invest in the property, then buyers can never buy property once the person has sold his first piece of property or has had property stolen from him. Because anytime that happens, they'll have no way to know, right, if how much they'll be exposed for. If they don't know how much they're going to be exposed for, they won't buy it. So Tikkun Olam, we don't do that. So that. Kate said, what's the case here? Hareisha gazel sadeh mechaveiro. Person stole a field from his friend, machra le'acher, and he sells it to a third party. Veish bicha, and this third party, who innocently bought the property and then invests in the property, are yotzam mitachat yodo. The nigzal can come and take the property away. It's his property in the end. You know, we feel bad for the guy who bought it, right? Hot property, but it's not his. So nigzal comes and takes the property. Kshu goba, now, the third party who bought it mistakenly from this gazlan, he's allowed to take the goveta karim nechasim shubadim. He's allowed to go back after the gazlan for the karim by nechasim shubadim, right, after encumbered property, because the karim is something that lukuchot could be aware of and they could watch out for. On the other hand, b'shevach, gohula minechasim b'nei chorin. Right over there, the shevach, he has to take out of only from unencumbered property, because that's the tikkun olam, that he can't claim shevach from encumbered property. Now, I won't go back to the Gemara over there, but remember that it's possible that the nigzal will have to pay the itziot for the shevach, because his property is improved, right? So he's going to have to give some sort of value back here, and then it would be the differential that he's collecting from the gazlan, right? I'm not, again, the parties in the machlokes Rashi and Tosfot over there, but just simply, for our purposes over here, he goes back and only claims it from Nechorin. Neima, lo nitein likatev. Let us say over here that the shtar should be entirely invalid. Why? Because the document that evidenced the sale between the right, gazlan and this third party is an invalid document. The gazlan had no right to sell the property. So now, why does this lakuach, or this lokeach, over here, why does he have a right to go back to the gazlan and collect from the encumbered property, even for the keren? The document is entirely invalid. The document's entirely invalid. Basically, what we're saying, you have nothing to come in front of the, right, in front of the gazlan with, or in front of the people who purchased property from the gazlan, real property of his, to get it back. So Gemara says, how can you compare the cases? Hotam, which remember if we weren't there, either mandamar nechleit lenei kri gazlan, either according to the one who says that the gazlan himself doesn't want to have a shame gazlan. Oh, either mandamar nechleit lenei kri gazlan, he wants to stand by his word. Sold the property and wants to keep his word over Neir. So then, mefais le demare, umukim le de shtare. He wants the shtar to be valid, and he's going to try to keep the shtar intact. So over there, even though Lodi Tani Katev, the person, the Gazlan, the person who wrote the invalid shtar, is trying to rectify the situation. He wants the shtar to be valid. Hacha, over here in our case, Lavruche Minei Kamikavin. The only reason he wrote the shtar was because he was trying to, you know, get the guy off his back because he was trying to steal the property from him. Shtar Mikayim Lei. So how can you be Mikayim the shtar in this case? So it depends on the intent of the individual who wrote the shtar. Again, in the intent, if the person is truly trying just to lie, right, and to do something invalid, or over in our case, he was trying to prevent himself from losing the property, then we say when the shtar is invalid, it becomes invalid entirely, and you can't say a portion of it is valid, and helps him out. On the other hand, in other cases, either where it was nitan likatev, just from a different date, we said, or there was some psul in it, but it wasn't entirely psul, or in the case of the gazlan, where the writing of the shtar, he wants the shtar to stay intact, because he really wants to rectify the situation. So in that case, we're going to say that portions of the shtar can remain intact because he really does want the shtar to stay around. But if his intent from the day one that he writes the shtar is the shtar be invalid, there we're not going to say that you can come along and validate the shtar and use that shtar to take away from encumbered property. All right. So this is a Mishnah that was often quoted now before in the Perek, but that is that you're not allowed to, right, sell forward fruit for delivery, a guaranteed supply until there's a market price for that supply. So now, Yatsa Shar, once there is a market price, Poskim, Apopishein, Lazeh, Yesh Lazeh. So then again, once there is a market price, you do not have to have the item in order to sell it. In that you can sell for it, you can guarantee supply, even though you're not in possession of the item, because of that general principle, which is that market becomes cash and the item become fungible now, because your cash is equivalent to having the item, because you can go out to the market and buy it at that price. So once you're given cash, you can go and purchase it anywhere. We don't worry about supply anymore. And therefore, it's not considered a bakbibit. We don't worry about that. Now, hayahu tchila lekotzrim. So now, if he's the first one to harvest, meaning that if that's the case, obviously there's no shower, there's nothing to talk about there. Poseki mola gadish. Right, there he can be poseki man with the gadish, meaning at the time that he's harvesting. Bala vichila banim. Now, all of these situations are the harvest moment to the times where you are bringing in the produce. So avich avanim is this some sort of kli in which they used to put the avanim to soften them and to heat them up before they press them. Well, matan shel zeitim, it's the same thing by zeitim, which is the different right, a different name by zeitim. Ve'alav beitzim shel yotzer. Over here, the beitzim are the clay of the yotzer when he's making them, they make them into balls before they the clay before they make them into kelim. They used to make them into a ball that they worked with. Right, ve'alav sid. Right, Mishu Shakob B'Kibshan, and then Sid, when they're putting it into, to make it into bricks, once they put it into Sidman, Uposek, so all these items you can already be Posekimo beforehand, right? But Ezo Shar Shir Tzer, that's what Rashi says. Doesn't matter at that point, doesn't matter what price you set, why. But then Mosh Vadish came in Shieshlo. Since you have it now, since you are currently in possession of what you are selling in the supply, Inkan Rebit. Rashi says there is no Rebit. Deme Achshav Ukanoilo. From this moment, it's as if the buyer is taking possession of the item that you're holding in your hand. Even though there's no real Kenyan over here, and he ain't lo nami avak ribit. Right, so over here, why it's kanui lo? They ain't lo nami avak ribit mitarabanu. Because even if he does not have it, if he does not have it in guaranteed supply for it, that's not an isudoraisa ribit. That's simply avak ribit. So over here, where he does have it, right, they were not gozer to have it be avak ribit. Because if he has it, we make it as if the buyer already took possession of it. And if he already took possession of it, it's as if it went up in his possession. The value went up in his possession. So if that's the case, we don't worry about a vakri bit. And when you have the item in possession, you're guaranteeing supply, you can sell it at any price. Any price or at any time, because, again, we look at it as if sold today. If it's if sold today, if whoever's benefiting, the price is going up, it's going up in the hands of the purchaser. You can sell dung all year long. Right? That I guess that's an open market for dung all year long. You have to have. You have to actually have the zevel. Ashva, the chachamim say yes. The person can posek by shar gvoa. Now shar gvoa over here is we would think of shar gvoa means higher price. It's actually the other way around. It's actually the lower price. Shar gvoah means more quantity for the same amount of money. So shar gvoah is the less price. So now, if the price goes down, means that he's allowed to set it, that the price drops, meaning that there'll be more quantity for money, that he'll get that. So Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Apishlo Pasakimo Bashar Gvoa, Yechol Omer, Tenli Kazeo, Tenli Et Ma'utai. That even if he didn't explicitly set the pricing that he will get the lower of pricing, either today's price or the future pricing, he automatically can get it because he has two choices here. He can either demand his money back, or he can tell him, either give me the lower price or give me my money back. He can invalidate the prior sale. Now why is that? So Rashi says, if you look at the last Rashi in the Mishnah, it says, Ten li kazeh, ten li ma'utai, sharlo mashach. There's no kinyan over here. Since there's no kinyan, he can demand his money back. But what about, even when you don't have a kinyan, you have a mishaparo? There's another para, hov lo natan ma'utav. Over here, he never gave any money yet. Amanat dekabel achshav el achar zman. So he gave money today, but the money today was not to create the mechir today, but only to purchase at a later date. So he's giving him the money, but didn't even create a mechir at this moment. So therefore, Rashi says it's both not a problem of mishicha backing out, it's no problem of mishu parah. V'tokach mishtane ashar, and therefore in the meantime, the market price changed. Stam date dinish, it's razula pasik, that a person has his focus on the lower of the market prices, and therefore he can pull his money in this case, and there is no mishu parah. As opposed to, if you remember back, Rashi, when he spoke about the issue of why it's not considered, when a person has the item in hand, why is it not considered to be a avak ribit in that case? Why is there not a problem of avak ribit? So Rashi says, because even though there's no kinyan, right, he's subject to misha para. Right, that's the machlokas de Rashi and the other Rishonim, whether misha para applies in those instances. So you see over here, Rashi says that over here, that there is no misha para. Whereas in Tzana Pimu Min Aleph, Rashi says, right, yeshlo mutar. Why if yeshlo is it mutar to sell for it? Hol min balach zor kaila u misha para. As he comes to reverse his position, he has what? He has a misha para on him. Right, so that is, even though, if he has yayin today, and he sells him the yayin today, right, all he's doing is converting the loan that he had now into yayin today. He's not selling him the yayin forward. So the difference over there will be, Rashi will say over there that this misha para is because the transaction is happening immediately. So therefore there's misha para. Over here, Rashi says because there's a delay in the transaction, therefore there is no misha para. Right now, the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Asi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, poskim al sharp shuk suk. Rabbi Yochanan says you're not allowed to guarantee supply, right? You're not allowed to supply forward on the Shar Hashuk. So what do you mean? Even this big massive shuk, right? The Kurdumus over here is a Itlis Rak, actually calls it a Gadol. Big, like a big market, a huge market. Not like a regular shuk that here and there, you know, the Beit Shemesh shuk. We're talking about Machane Yehuda. We're not even a big shuk. So he says, "Amar lei lo amar Rabbi Yochanan l'bshuk shel ayirut." No, he's only talking about the city, the medium type cities, the low kavei tarbayu, because the market price there is not steady or stable, because it can change all the time. When I'm talking about a huge suk where the price will stay stable, then it's okay. Well, the man desaket the adayinami karo. Wait a minute. Now, based on the havamina, what was the havamina? Dam Rabbi Yochanan filu kudum esazeh. The havamina was the Gemara thought that even Rabbi Yochanan would say that even in a kudumus, that you're not allowed to set the price based on the grudemus. According to Rabbi Yochanan, as you can do with our Mishnah, there has to be some shuk that you can set your prices on. What shuk is that? So Masnisin b'chiti da kavai v'arbay. There it's talking about when the people open up their silos and the boats are bringing in all the produce. So then it's at that point in time, the pricing is stable for a long duration. So there would actually be three levels of shuk, or three levels of pricing. You have a shuk ayirot, which sets pricing, but that's something that can move over time. Then you have a kudumus, which is a very large shuk, which sets pricing for a duration of time, but not for extended duration. Then you'll have this time period where everybody opens their silos, the boats are bringing produce in, where the shuk stays for a long time. So each of those three. So Yochanan, in the end, the maskana takes the middle, shuk is enough. But the Havamina was that even when only the shuk where the pricing stayed stable for long periods of time would it be enough? And the Maskana is no, it's only that middle shuk. Right? So that's why early on, if you remember the Gemara said before that Ein Poskim Perot El Ashtar, right, Rashi would say, Ma Chiddush, Well, what's the big deal about Rav Kahana? He says, because our Mishnah back in here, this Mishnah, it's not clear how to explain the Mishnah. What shahr are we talking about? As a Rashi, over there we say, is it a Purdumos? Is it a, right, what type of shuk? Comes along to explain the Mishnah and say that that Mishnah is talking about a regular shuk. And that's why the Chiddush according to Rashi, at least those who disagree, but the Chiddush according to Rashi was, Oposhkin al Sharb Shuk, Rashi said over there, Umutam Azeb, Tzantaf Samachim Umadbet, Tam Azeb, Poskim al Smach Sharb Shuk, Vushar Yotzei Adei Chamrim, Abin Tuvada Shuk, Ukrachim, Vavishim Bela Zeb, Vim Tomar, Mishnatenu Hizeh, Hizeh Mishnah, and I in bed, I'm in bed, what are you telling me? He says, Ika Lamad Damar Khan, Ain Poskin al Sharb Shuk, Shuk. There's someone who says you can't be posted on a shashuk. Rabbi Yochanan, who says you can't be posted on a shashuk. And that's the Chana. Not like Rabbi Yochanan. Don't explain the Mishnah. That's what Rashi said back on the Samakim Olam Bet. Right now, Gemara continues. Tar Rabbanan. Ain't poskin al perot, as yecheh star. You can't be posted on perot yecheh star. Yatzar shar. Once there is a mark of price, poskim, afu pi shein lezeh yesh lezeh. So even though that one doesn't have, the other one has. Hayu, this is a very interesting case. Hayu chadashot mi arba mishanot mishalosh. Again, the pricing here, when we talk about it, arba means that it's cheaper. The new ones are four kur to a seller or something like that. Mishanot mishalosh. And the older ones are three kur to a seller. Why is that? Why is there a difference in pricing? Because the new grain has to dry out. So there's more work involved and it's going to take more time. So if you buy new grain, since you have to do the work of drying it out, you're going to get more quantity for your pricing. The old ones are already dried out. And since they're done, that work is done, you can buy them at the more expensive price, which is three kur to a seller. So in that case, ein poskin, this is the ein poskin actually yitzei ashar the chadash v'yashan. You're not allowed to then sell the chadashot ba'arba until their pricing stabilizes. This means that they're both the same price. The way Rashi learns it here, it's interesting. Rashi, the other Rishonim disagree, but we'll go with Rashi's shot over here. Rashi says, "Achi yitzei ashar ba'arba l'chadash uli yashan." Until the pricing equalizes between the chadash and yashan, you may not sell the chadash. Which is interesting. You may not sell the chadash at four to a seller because until they stabilize the pricing, until both of them are four kur to the seller. Hayilu kotot mi'arba. Right, so now the kutot are, sounds to me, Rashi calls, says that this is mixed grains. And they're gathered together from many properties. Others say the kutot means from leket, shem leket, and him gathered together from many fields, they put it together and sell it, marba. So that was cheaper because it's assumed to be lower quality grain because, right, they're all together, mixed together. But if you got it from a private seller where the quality was assumed to be higher, right, then you would only get three kur to the seller, it would be more expensive. Then again, the Brisa says, "In poskim yitzei ashar lelokeit ulemocher." You're not allowed to again sell until there's a market for both. The way Rashi reads it again, that it means a market price that's equal between both. They're both selling for four kur to the seller. The way Rashi reads it, the problem of selling or pre-selling is because there's no clear market pricing here, because you can see there's a differential in the market. And Rashi says, until the market stabilizes where they're both equal, you can't sell it at these pre-market prices. Of course, other Rishonim we're going to explain means means that until there's a clear market for both of them, and that's the market price, and then you can sell it. In the pre-market, where there's a differential in pricing, you can't sell those differentials because, right, those are not considered to be valid market pricing. So Amar Rav Nachman, poskim lukutot kashar lukutot. That you can, you can sell the lukutot at the shar lukutot. If there's a price in the market earlier on, and this is why we drove Rashi to say his pshat, that if there's a pricing for the kutot out in the market, then they can sell it to the shar lukutot. So Mlei Rav of Nachman, Maishna lokeit, why do you say that the market price for the lokeit is okay? Because if he's unable to supply, he can always just borrow it from his friend. And either, if that means the Ani, he's a friend, the Ani he can borrow from, or another person who sells mixed grains, he can borrow it from that individual and sell it to him. Balabai Nami. So why do you say the same thing about a Balabait? Yosef Malakut. He can also borrow from a Lakut. So why can't he sell his produce today? Because he can also borrow produce. So why is it invalid for him to sell at this point in time? So Malay, Balabait Zilebe Milso the Mezif Milakut. Now, Balabai takes pride in his grain and his property. He would never borrow from Lakut because that's a lower quality grain and he wouldn't be willing to borrow. So since he's not willing to borrow, he can't supply or provide the item if he doesn't have it or it's not complete today.
Well, if Yasa Shar, then if Elo, why
No, this is before it. There's the Lukot Kishar Lukotot. This is when it's not, this earlier time when they're not equal. The two Sharot are different, right? There's a difference in the Sharot. And then that's what Rashi is saying. Until they stabilize, until they're equal, then you can't sell it. The Tosus points out over here, it's simply only if he can borrow it. If he actually has to go buy out and purchase it, then it's not a Shar that it can be posek alav. Because if he has to go buy it, then that's not considered the market price. If he can borrow it, and anybody's willing to lend it to him, that's already clarification that that's the market price, and people are willing to lend because they know he can place it in the market. Right? The problem is that if you give money to a balabayit, you can't replace it with a kutot, because right, the first answer assumes that he could replace it with a kutot, and that would be sufficient. The problem with that is what? That they're not of equal quality. And a person who comes and purchases from a balabayit, his expectation is that he's going to get that higher quality grain. So then the balabayit can't simply go out and borrow it, right, to replace it, and replace it because he can't do that. It won't help him that there are other lukotot out there that have grain. Samar of Sheshet, Amar.
Is it the same quality?
What? Well, it's not the same quality, that's the problem, right?
Right, but if it was the same quality, so then you...
Right, but then that's the question. It seems over here that it's an early part of the market that he's unable to get the same quality at that time. That's why the Bashar is not out. It seems that there's a differential in the Shar now, which is indicative of it being an earlier period of time where it's not easy to acquire or get this type of item. Right, if it was already equaling, or at least according to Rashi, that it's equal, or that we're at the point where there's a full market for these items, then it's clear he could do it because, like we said before, you can even sell something that you don't have at that point in time. So then we don't worry about it. You can't borrow against the market pricing. So what does that mean? You can't borrow money and say, okay, I'm borrowing money today. Right, so Rashi brings actually two interpretations down here. There's one from himself that he heard and one from the Bahag. So again, Rashi, says, listen, I'm borrowing money from you. And if I don't show up the money later on, I'll have to supply you. I can pay you in kind with fruits, but we'll do it based on today's market price. Because even though Rashi says, what's the problem here? Because generally, if you do that, derech mekach u'memkar, it'd be fine. That's what our Mishnah says. Our Mishnah says, if you supply, you guarantee supply for it, which is basically, he's handing you cash today, and you're guaranteeing supply at some point in time for it, right? That's equivalent of lending him money, right, and then paying him back at today's pricing. There it's allowed because you did it as a transaction. Over here, because the transaction was set up as a loan, there it's invalid. Because derech avos, or that's what Rashi says. The difference between our Mishnah in this case here, exactly the same, which is that I'm getting money, and I'm basically telling you that I will supply it to you later on. But in one case, I'm compelled to supply it to you, and it's a mekach u'memkar, it's a transaction, so that is permitted. In a case where it's a loan, we say, no, you can't do that, right? Because it's structured as a loan. If it's structured as a loan, it can't work. That's what Rashi says. Now, the Bahag, Bahagot Kodom Mefresh, in Lavin Tzav, Besav, Smarach, Shar, Veshub, Shuk. You can't lend somebody a sa today in order to get repaid a sa later on. Based on the Shar Shuk, based on the pricing today. That will say, and he can go out in the market and he can buy it anywhere he wants, he can replace it. We don't say that. And you're not allowed to lend sub sub. Now, Amalei Rav Yosi bar Chamla Rav Sheshet, Vamrei La Rav Yosi bar Abba Rav Sheshet, Umi Amar Rav Yehuna Hachi. Did Rav Huna really say such a thing? Baha Bai Mine Rav Huna, they asked Rav Huna, Ane Bnei Rav, Diyas Vebe Tishrei Upari Be David. These, Bnei Rav, Bani Bnei Rav, which are the Talmidei Chachamim, or these students of the Yeshiva, that they borrow money in Tishrei, Uparei B'Tevet, and then they pay it back in Tevet. So when they borrow in Tishrei, what's the story, what's the status of Peirot at that time? The market's open at that time, right? Tishrei is the time when, like Chag HaSif, it's the time when all the Peirot come in and there's availability of stuff, so it's cheap at that time. Then they pay back in Tevet. What's Tevet? Tevet's the middle of the rainy season. At the time, there's no supply out there in Tevet. Right? So then, but they say that Kishar Shot Tishrei. When they pay it back in Tevet, they're going to pay it back based on the market price in Tishrei, the cheaper market price. So now, is that allowed? Now, of course, if the, according to the Bahá'í, it meant that they borrowed wheat in Tishrei, and now they're going to pay back wheat in Tevet. So now, what's the status? Are you allowed to do such a thing? So Rav Huna says, is it mutar or not? You can get this stuff anywhere you want, meaning that at the time that the loan was structured, or now you can go out and get the wheat where you need to get it. So it's not a problem. He buys Zavne Uparile, he Kara. I'm sorry, Uparile. So he could, if he wants to, he can go out and purchase it, he can buy it. So since he's able to purchase it at that price at the time that he borrows it, then it's fine that he's paying him back in kind later on, or going to the bag, it's fine that he can pay him back the wheat later on, because the market pricing was set earlier, or he has the availability of that in the market at that time. So Mikara Sava Ravuna in Lavin. True is, Ravuna originally thought you weren't allowed to borrow like this. Came to Shama the Hadam Rashmu Barchiam Rabalaza Lavin, but then he heard from Rashmu Barchiam Rabalaza that you were allowed to do this. Amarhiu Nami Lavin. So then he changed his mind and said that it was okay. So again, originally when we got that statement or the quote from Amar Rav Sheshes Amar Rav Huna in Lavino Shar B'Shuk, that was his original position of Rav Huna. Later on, Rav Huna changed his mind when he found out that Rav Shmuel Bar Chiya Amar Belazar said that you're allowed to loan it. He said allowed to loan it, and that was his answer to the Bar Mei Rav when they had the question, right? Bar Mei Rav Huna, Hanu B'nei Bei Rav, and there he passed them that they were allowed to do such a thing. Right now, Tanu Rabbanan, Hamulich Chavila Mimakom Limakom, person who is taking items or produce from one place to another. Matzo Chaviro, his friend finds him, Ramarlo Tsnuli, to give it to me, Vani Alela Chakder Shomim Lechaboto Makom. Instead of you taking it to that place and getting the higher price in that place, basically, give it to me today and I'll guarantee you, I'll pay you that higher price. But basically, I'll take it there and I'll take care of it for you. What's the trade off for me? So then, Gedesh Shomim, don't be sure. So now, what does he gain a benefit? He says that I will use the money until a certain time, meaning that I'll go sell it for you over there, I'll have usage of the money, and then I'll bring it back to you the money. So the payoff for this individual is that he gets to use the money after he sells the produce over there at the higher price. So that's the trade-off. It's working for him, and he gets to use the money. Now, it depends. Birshut mocher mutar. If the achrayut remains with the mocher, the seller, meaning that he takes on himself the responsibility if he gets lost, onus vizula, that if that's the case, then it's mutar. Why? Because then the sale only takes place when it reaches the higher priced neighborhood. The sale only takes place when the higher priced neighborhood. That means that the money belonged to the produce belonged to the mocher until that time. And when did the loan start? The loan started only at the time when it was given at the higher price. On the other hand, if the lokeach is now responsible for the item today, that means that the sale took place today, and then he's getting it at the higher price for it. That's a fuck me beat. We've seen that all along. If you buy something today, right, at the shahr, that's forward shahr, which is going to be the higher price, that's not allowed because of a bakri beat. So then if it's the bishut lokeach, it's a sur. Right, because that is like the cases that we had of selling forward in the shahr shuk, that's going to be forward from today's pricing. There, it's like a bakri beat. It looks like he's selling him basically for the shahr of the ma'ot that he's lending him today. Right, he's going to have to pay him back the higher price that he sells in the future. So there, Tosos, of course, points out over here, that the case, we just learned this, in the case of splitting when the person goes into business together, that over here, what's going to be? What about the fact that he took the items over to the shuk? Doesn't he have to pay him for that? What about his salary? If he doesn't pay his salary, then what? Then there's a effective interest for not paying his salary. That was the whole problem we had with the Gemara before. That's what Tosafot says over here. If you go, not to know Sekharav Malo, Mizono. It has to be over here that he pays him for taking it up to the other location, he pays him for the Mizono, whatever it has to do. All his expenditures are covered by the Mocher over here. Otherwise, you have a problem of these salaries, lack of salary being effective interest. Then Tosafot says, well, if that's the case, what's the Chiddush here? If the Mocher, right, what's the Chiddush that it's Mutar? I mean, he's paying him a salary. Right, he's taking a chayut on it. There's no chiddush over here. He says the chiddush yesh lamar to seifa yitzrichle b'shul lokeach asur. Says b'shul lokeach what there was asur to saf adat kol lo mechzik ribit. Kev shemucher b'makom ayoker. We would think maybe it doesn't look like ribit because where he actually sells it, where he takes the produce to and sells it, that is the market price. It's not that he's selling forward on a market price. Today, that market price is available in that other location. So that is, we would think, maybe it's not repeat. So that's why the Gemara says, no, that is a buck repeat, still classified as a repeat, and it is a sur. So that'll be the chiddush over here. All right, we'll stop here.
How do you take this?